Of the Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Hope you're having a wonderful week. Time to talk a little football and more with our guy Rob Fisher of Grind City Media. We'll do that in just a moment. Don't forget to subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Spotify. Click subscribe, leave a review, send me a screenshot, tweet me at CHRABE, CHRABE, or you can email me at chris@scoopswithdannymac.com. All right, let's visit with Rob Fisher on another Tuesday edition of the Chris Raby Show, another weekend of college football in the books. Fish, what's going on, man? In the midst of a crazy 2020, we at least had, well, two of three NFL games on Thursday, I should say. We had football all weekend with college and NFL. We had some semblance of Thanksgiving weekend normalcy, I guess.
Yeah, now we got Wednesday afternoon NFL, and then next week we got two Monday night games, a Tuesday night game. So we got football every night now, thanks to all these postponements that we've had. But at least we're playing and getting the games in. So that's the best part.
Yeah, we've talked over the last couple of weeks about what we know or what we think we might know, and I guess we'll start in the SEC. Of course, you can hear Rob on The Odds Couple, part of Grind City Media. Follow Rob on Twitter at The Fish Nation. You've done a lot of Alabama talk this year, and man, they just put a whooping on Auburn. Without Nick Saban, it looked like they just wanted to punish Auburn as much as humanly possible on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Alabama is we've known all season how good their offense is, even after they lose one of their best players offensively. They just throw another one in there. So offensively, we've known they've been good, but I think the scary thing about Alabama is their defense seems to get better every single week, and they just put a hurting on Auburn last week, and this week will be interesting as well because, you know, Nick Saban may downplay it, but revenge. You know, LSU was the team last year that kept them out, and LSU went to Tuscaloosa and beat them. So this year, the way LSU's playing and the way Alabama's playing and those two teams meeting this week, I would expect another Alabama pummeling this week at the hands of LSU. But it's interesting when you look at the numbers and the trends. Ed Orgeron is the coach of LSU. It's 13-0 following a loss, and they lost last week to Texas A&M. And they've come back, and they've been strong winning games. I think they're like 44-4 the last 48 times they've lost coming back the following week. But this is not going to be an easy one. I think that trend gets disturbed this week when LSU hosts Alabama.
Yeah, I want to get back to that in a moment. But Mac Jones, another 300 yards, 5 touchdowns. Is he getting enough credit? Would he be getting more credit if it were a normal season? And in the midst of the incredible run of quarterbacks that Nick Saban has had, where does Mac Jones stack up? And do people appreciate where he stacks up?
I don't think he gets the credit because he's just not flashy. You know, I mean, he's like the other Alabama quarterbacks, like A.J. McCarron, like Greg McElroy, and the guys who have gone
through
there.
But the numbers are just eye-popping compared to
those. They're staggering. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, all the weapons that he's got, and, you know, the team has the ball a lot of the time because their defense is so good. I think he's starting to get the credit now because, you know, coming into the season, he wasn't the flashy guy, and, you know, Kyle Trask was doing great things at Florida, and Trevor Lawrence certainly was a favorite coming into the season, but now he's missed a couple of games due to COVID. So I think Mac Jones is starting to emerge as the Heisman favorite. And if he continues to put up the numbers that he's putting up week in and week out, and they go unscathed through the rest of the season, which they should, he'll be the odds on favorite to win the Heisman. So I think he's starting to get the credit that he deserves. And, you know, because at first he wasn't putting up the 500 yards. He just puts up the consistent big numbers week in and week out. And it's amazing that his numbers and Kyle Trask's numbers at Florida are better than what Joe Burrow did a year ago. And it was one of the greatest seasons in college football history. So, yeah, I think Mac Jones probably has a slight lead over Kyle Trask right now. And, you know, that might depend on the SEC championship when it comes down to it, when those two teams most likely will play for the SEC title in Atlanta. And maybe it'll come down to that game. But I'd put my money on Mac Jones right now for sure.
You know, it's funny, Fish, because over the last couple of weeks, and even going back to our conversation when Theo Epstein announced he was leaving the Cubs, we've been talking about motivation and about guys and how long they want to stay at certain jobs. And I was thinking about Nick Saban, and even over the weekend when he wasn't there, then listening to him call in after the game, like I was just imagining him wherever he was watching the game, just being so angry about the smallest things probably that didn't go Alabama's way. And the way that they're rolling and the way that they're probably going to keep rolling for the foreseeable future, who knows if this will ever stop.
He just doesn't look like he's ready. I mean, it was weird a couple of years ago, the last time Alabama won a national championship. All season he kept talking about it being his favorite team and the one that he's most proud of. And they go on to win the national championship, and you thought, okay, just those things, because he doesn't say those things very often about his teams. You know, it's always about getting better the next week and taking what you did well and doing it better the next week. And, you know, he was so lovable on that team that you thought, wow, he just kind of sounds like maybe if they were to win a championship, he'd step aside and go out a winner and tie and bear and all of those things. And he just looks like there's no slowing down. And he looked a little happier last week than expected, because I'm with you. I thought he'd be absolutely miserable watching from his home, but he even cracked a smile when he talked to the media. And so that was good to see. I can't imagine, with the recruiting classes they continue to pour out, with the success they continue to have year in and year out, they'll be in the college football playoff again this year with a great chance. They're the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. I mean, he can leave when he wants, but I don't think there's any slowing him down. I mean, even at his age, he doesn't seem that age. He still seems spry, and he's still competing and still doing things at the top of his game. You know, this isn't a Bobby Bowden situation of, oh, when's he going to leave, or when are we going to have to make that dreadful decision to let him go? He's still at the top of his game, so there's no slowing him down. And I don't see him stepping away anytime in the foreseeable future, unless Miss Terry tells him that he needs to spend more time at home. But I don't see that happening as well. So I don't know. I don't know when the end is for Nick Saban. I don't know if any of us know, but his downfall certainly isn't happening anytime soon.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that, you mentioned at Orcheron and LSU, we saw Texas A&M a 20-7 win over LSU over the weekend. The Aggies now ranked fifth. They're 6-1. Their only loss, of course, came at Alabama back in their second game of the season in Tuscaloosa. How good is Texas A&M? What is their path to potentially get into the playoff? Granted that they won't need to play in the SEC championship game. And is it too much hyperbole, too much living in the moment, Fish, to ask if we're seeing a changing of the guard, if A&M is potentially jumping over LSU? Is it just, you know, the year after a championship run for LSU? Is that complete overreaction, or is A&M for real?
Well, it's weird. On the Odds Couple, every week we rank the top three teams in the SEC. And for the most part, you know, the beginning of the season, it was pretty easy. It was Alabama, Georgia, 1 and 2. But 3 was always difficult to come up with, because there's not a lot of great belief in Texas A&M. And then maybe it started because at the beginning of the year they had a game against Vanderbilt and they looked dreadful. They ended up winning that game, but, you know, Vanderbilt barely had enough players to play and they hadn't been practicing. And you thought, well, how the hell is A&M just beating them by a touchdown at home to start the season? But all they've done is gone on and win. And now with the win over Florida as well, I think you look at the SEC now and Alabama's number one. The question is, who's two, who's three? And while I think with the eye test, you'd say Florida's number two, but A&M beat them. So it's hard not to have A&M number two there. But just on the eye test, A&M still doesn't look, you know, great. I know a lot of people are giving A&M trouble because of their win last week against LSU. They didn't look great. It wasn't a great performance offensively. They went at 20-7, didn't cover the spread. But I thought that was a big win for A&M because LSU was coming off a very good emotional win in Fayetteville against Arkansas. LSU's more talented than their production has been this year. They're just young. They had a lot of turnover. So I thought LSU coming into A&M, maybe gaining a little confidence, maybe a little look past game for A&M. But A&M took care of business, so I give them credit. I'm not a huge Jimbo fan. I'm not a huge A&M fan. I haven't seen the real improvement from their quarterback, Kellen Mond. But they do keep winning. I think as far as a playoff is concerned, because of the loss to Alabama, Alabama would have to lose twice for A&M to get in the SEC championship game. That's not going to happen. Now, maybe their best chance to get in a playoff would be for Florida to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. Then maybe A&M sneaks in. But your problem there is going to be, you know, if Notre Dame doesn't lose the rest of the way and then Clemson beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship, you're looking at Clemson and Notre Dame both probably having a better case than A&M to get in. Florida or Alabama, one of those two would be in. And then you look at the Big Ten, you know, is Ohio State going to have enough on their resume to get in?
Northwestern.
Yeah, although last week that wasn't good for Northwestern, so that kind of eliminated them.
But yeah, that was brutal.
If Ohio State's unscathed, even if they're not eligible for the SEC or for the Big Ten championship, they still might get enough from the committee to be put into that playoff. So I think it's close to impossible for A&M, but as long as they're hovering right there around number five, I guess they still have a chance. I just think it's going to be difficult for them to move up anyway. You know, they got a big one this week at Auburn. They should take care of business, but this seems like if they're going to slip up, this would be the week going to Auburn. But I like A&M in this game. I like Auburn to cover. It's a big point spread. But I think A&M can come out of this game with a victory, and they'll stay right there at number five, and it's a good spot to be in because Cincinnati's not going to jump them as long as A&M keeps winning. And you think out of that top four, somebody will fall out. Now, will they fall out below Texas A&M? If Florida loses to Alabama, they certainly fall below A&M because A&M beat them head-to-head. But it's a matter of Clemson, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Alabama. Are they better with the eye test? Are they better with the schedule that they played, you know, with their one win against Florida? Well, Notre Dame would have a win against Clemson, albeit without Trevor Lawrence. But I don't think we need to do that because Clemson's backup quarterback is pretty darn good. He's a five-star too. So I think Clemson and Notre Dame, if Clemson were to win that game, they might both be in. So that might leave A&M on the outside looking in. But they're in pretty good position. They just have to win out and hope the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I wonder about Notre Dame. And granted, I am extremely biased because I despise Notre Dame. But if Notre Dame and Clemson play again, and if Trevor Lawrence plays, Clemson has to be favored in that game, right? Like,
yeah.
Despite the
yeah.
records and despite Notre Dame winning?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And, you know, I think Clemson was a favorite the first time they played, even without Trevor Lawrence. It was a small favorite, but they were favored in that game. So, yeah, Clemson would definitely be favored. I think Notre Dame's better this year than what we've seen in the years past because I think their defense is phenomenal. And their offense, Ian Book, has been there what seems like 15 years, and he's gotten much better as a quarterback. So, I like Notre Dame's chances. I think they deserve the shot. Even if they lose now, if they get blown out by Clemson, yeah, you could say Trevor Lawrence certainly made a big difference and Notre Dame just couldn't be on the field with them. Then maybe Notre Dame pops out of that top four. But if it's a good game and Notre Dame's in it, and even if they lose, I think Notre Dame with one loss and that being to Clemson in an ACC championship game might still have a path to the playoff.
Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, is one of the great sponsors of the program and Scoops with DannyMac.com. And right now is a perfect time to learn about a home loan refinance. You hear the word all the time, but maybe you don't even know what you're doing. Essentially, you're redoing your loan. So in terms of your first mortgage, you're retooling your loan. The home loan expert is paying off your current loan and giving you a brand new loan. You can decide the term, 30 years. You can go shorter. Give them a call. Look at your current mortgage and ask the home loan expert, Ryan Kelly, if they can do anything to improve your situation. It all depends on your goal, and they will work with you. But everyone with a mortgage loan can benefit from calling Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, today for a free mortgage analysis. Go to thehomeloanexpert.com, thehomeloanexpert.com. alabamaoffers.com. Learn about not just the incredible loan offers that they have, but also the incredible customer service, their customer-first approach that separates them from anyone else you could get a mortgage through. Ryan Kelly is the home loan expert online at thehomeloanexpert.com. Schnucks Rewards, one more reason to love Schnucks. Get the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards. The Schnucks Rewards app allows you to earn points every time you shop for money off your next purchase. But there's so much more in the app to simplify shopping. For instance, you can get exclusive digital savings, including over 100 new digital coupons every week. The shopping list helps keep you organized, add items on the go, plus you can share it. Recipes in the app make meal planning easy. Search for recipes by ingredients and add them to your shopping list. Go to schnucks.com and check out more about the app that gets you Schnucks Rewards, the Schnucks Rewards app. Download it on the App Store or Google Play. The Schnucks Rewards app rewards you for shopping at Schnucks. All right, who are the Mount Rushmore of guys who it seems like have been or were at their respective schools for 15 years?
Well, I'll go back to one from St. Louis from years ago, Kevin Grauer, Rich Grauer, coaches Billikens, his kid. Kevin Grauer seemed to play forever. Julian Winfield, the former Missouri Tiger, and Billiken, he played forever. Those are a couple of St. Louis guys that seem to be on a roster forever. Ian Bucca being that guy for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Who else? Boy, there are a lot of them. I'm trying to think right off the top of my head.
I'm thinking basketball. This one might be a little close to home, although he did make it to the NBA. Northwestern had a center named Evan Eschmeyer. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He was there for about 18 years.
Yeah.
his son actually played with him in Northwestern, kind of a LeBron, Bronny thing, I think. There are some good ones. And this year, you know, we're going to see over the next year or two because of COVID and because of the eligibility rules, we're going to see a lot of these guys run it back. I find it so funny in the NBA, and like, I understand it, but I think a lot of people, if you're a college basketball fan, you scratch your head if you're watching the draft last week, and there's so much made of guys' age. And, you know, especially you look at a team like the Grizzlies and Jaren Jackson Jr. or, you know, the Bulls and Patrick Williams from Florida, especially in basketball, the way that you can project the exponential improvement of a player from age 18 to 19, 19 to 20, and what that means from a draft stock standpoint compared to, you know, the Michigan State senior who's 23 years old, and why teams value the youth over you know, the experience.
Well, it's the word upside that we hear in every draft. You know, in basketball, especially at that age, and, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is younger than the two guys the Grizzlies drafted this year. And
wow.
he's been in the league for 2 years. So, you know, upside is always important, especially when you're looking at the first round. You know, first round is guys that are coming out after their freshman year. They have the most upside. They have the most talent, and they're the guys that are going to come out and go pro early. I always think when you look at late first round or second round, you got to throw age out the window. You know, if you're looking at a guy in the second round with upside, well, how much more upside can a guy actually have when he's a second round projected guy? I think when you look at second round guys, throw age out and just find guys that can play basketball. That's what impressed me about the Grizzlies draft this year. They got guys that were all conference defensive players for like 2 years, or all-conference first team for like 2 years, guys who are seniors, but you know what you're getting with them immediately. They can play basketball. You're not getting them to have upside and be a guy that's going to start in your future. You're looking for guys that can just be in your rotation immediately. And I think what the Grizzlies did, they targeted guys, they moved around in the draft to get guys that can just play ball. And, you know, you get guys like that, you count on them being in your rotation in year one of the rookie season. Now, are they going to compete for rookie of the year? No, but they're going to give you minutes and they're going to be a part of your team for a long time to come. So I think the Grizzlies did well there. And I like that sort of angle when you're looking at second round picks. Get guys that can play. Draymond Green, it was a second round pick, but you know what? He was the all conference player of the year. You know, he could play basketball. You know, he was smart. He was well coached by Tom Izzo. So take a shot at him and just let him play. And look what he's done in his career. So, you know, the Grizzlies got Dylan Brooks a few years ago. He ended up starting for the team and still starts for the team. So you can find those guys. And I think finding those guys, the key is just finding guys that can play and play with that dog attitude and, you know, defensive guys, because that defense translates well from college to the NBA. And, you know, I think you find guys like that who can just help your roster and who can play now instead of taking a guy in a second round that might have upside. But what he's doing basically is taking a roster spot for 2 years and probably won't play. So I like what the Grizzlies did, getting guys that can play right now. And the Spurs have always done that, gotten guys that can play now, or they've gotten guys that they could stash away for a couple of years in Europe and then bring them over. You know, that's kind of the route I think teams should take more in that second round. I think there's too much of an age bias when it comes to the draft, especially in the second round, because, you know, if a guy's 22 years old, I mean, seriously, if you don't think he's got much upside, well, if he can play basketball, he can play basketball. So I think it's kind of stupid for teams to take that sort of risk in a second round pick when you only have two rounds in the draft.
Well, Fisher, goes back to a word we were talking a lot about last week when talking about college and college football, and that's culture. And if you have a culture, you can bring just about anyone in, but you can bring in the second round guy with the upside, or, you know, with the upside to potentially, I'm not talking about the 19 or 18 year old upside, the upside to potentially help right away or be a great practice player, you know, help your team, improve your team, know that he's going to fit in with the culture right now. If you have a good team, if you have a good locker room, and you don't have to worry about that. Like, 1,000,000% biased, but I think Jonte Porter was a great pickup by the Grizzlies because he won't need to play right away. And that's a guy who, if he hadn't, you know, blown his knee out a couple of times, who knows where he would have been. I know he had been linked to the Spurs. That could be a guy who ends up being upside in terms of low risk, high potential reward. And with this type of team and the type of team that is building a winning culture, maybe he fits in well if he doesn't need to be counted on right away to contribute on the court.
Well, and going back to the Grizzlies again, just because it's the team that I know the most about, you know, last year they made a deal and they picked up Josh Jackson from Phoenix. Well, he was a guy that was a top five pick in the draft. He didn't pan out, but he came to the Grizzlies. They wanted to take a look at him and see if he could be a part of the future. And, well, he wasn't. They had an option to pick up his contract this year. They didn't. Detroit Pistons signed him. Wish him the best of luck. Jonte Porter, another great example, a guy who fits into the culture and a guy who, you know, might still have that upside, might still have that potential. You just don't know. And obviously the Grizzlies think he does because they just signed him to a multi-year contract. So they think he could be part of that future. And I like that picked up as well, taking a shot at a guy. But the one thing, and you're exactly right, the thing that the Spurs did so well for a long time, and I think the thing that the Grizzlies are doing well right now under their new management, which has been around for a year and they've done it so quickly, is build a culture. Identify a type of player that you want and build the team around that. We've seen teams, including the Grizzlies, when they do draft guys, you're drafting young guys who just have upside and have potential. Well, they don't necessarily fit into what you're doing. They might not even fit in a position. There might not be a position for them. You just take the best athlete. Well, what's he going to do other than waste time on your bench and waste a roster spot? The Grizzlies identified a culture, and every guy that they have signed, traded for, or now even drafted, it's about basketball IQ, it's about dogged defense, and it's about fitting around your young core of three guys. And they've identified those guys to fit in what they do. And I think that's so important for NBA teams because your roster is so small and so limited that you've got to build a culture that stays together. You've got to build a culture that the players believe in, and you have to find players that can fit into that. And I think the Grizzlies have done a great job of that this offseason, last offseason, and even during the season. So it's exciting to be a Grizzlies fan right now, because I don't think you could have ever said that about the Grizzlies. Sure, during their playoff run, they had a niche, they had an identity, but it was really four guys. Four guys made the identity of the team. The core four did. But now you're building an identity of an entire roster. And that's something different that the Grizzlies have never had.
Yeah, and that's why I'm just so impressed. I know we've talked about it before, but the way they were able to really give it a shot and give it a couple more shots until the time was right with the core that they had. And then really, I don't know what the word is, but kind of a graceful rebuild and giving then, you know, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, giving those guys opportunities with other teams to try and go win right away. At the same time, getting valuable pieces back. They didn't hold on too long. They didn't tear things down too quickly. I don't think there was any ill intent from anyone, any parties involved, including the fans, which is a really, really delicate thing to pull off. And, you know, it's paying dividends. You obviously need to get a little bit of luck and need to have the ping pong balls bounce the right way to get potentially a once-in-a-generation type player like Ja Morant. But holy cow, man. I mean, everything outside of that, including John, including the guys that they've put around him and Jaren, they've pulled it off. I think you got to give them about an A-plus to this point.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's funny, you know, I do a radio spot here locally every week. And, you know, before the draft, we were talking and I just kept going on and on and on about how smart the Grizzlies are. And I was like, boy, I really sound like a Grizzlies broadcaster. I need to apologize for sounding like such a homer. But really, in just a year and a half, the trust that you have in the front office for the Grizzlies is remarkable, because there was never a trust in the Grizzlies front office for a long time. And now there is, because of those things that are very apparent: finding an identity, finding a culture, and building around the three guys. And yes, getting rid of your four stars, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol, and Mike Conley, it was very difficult. It was, and probably hung on just a little too long, faded them out with Zebo and Tony going first. And then it was Marc Gasol, and then it was Mike Conley. But the deals that they made were well thought out, well educated. And the Mike Conley deal is one that just keeps reaping the benefits of the reward with the trades that they made, and then trades that they made from those players, picks that they've picked up. I mean, they got so much in the Mike Conley deal that, you know, nobody can really blame the Grizzlies for doing it. And now with this different brand of basketball and a different style and an exciting young team, I think no one's forgotten what those guys did for the Grizzlies, but I think everybody is happy with the moves that have been made. Everybody's happy with what they've gotten in return, and everybody's happy for the success of the guys who left. You know, they're still beloved here in Memphis. Their numbers will go up in the banners, in the rafters one day. All of them will, but it was time to move on, and it was time to change. You know, we talked about that last week. You know, sometimes it's just time to – the time has just run out, and it's time to change, and the Grizzlies went through that, but the change has gone very smoothly. And it's such a drastic change of style that it's been exciting to watch. And, you know, even in a year last year where the Grizzlies were a 500 team, it was an exciting brand of basketball to watch. And it's an exciting future as well.
All right, here's a tease for you. Coming up after the break, what Nick Saban, the Memphis Grizzlies rebuild, and barbecue nachos have in common. It might be more obvious than you think. You like that? Plus, who are the Jets targeting at number one if Trevor Lawrence says he doesn't want to bite into the Big Apple? Those are teases right there.
Yeah, those were great. I hope. Did you write those down?
Greeny teases, yeah. Rob Fisher from Grind City Media, The Odds Couple, and very, very soon, NBA basketball. You guys are in the training camp this week, next week?
Yeah, training camp starts this week, and, you know, baby, it's going to be weird. You know, preseason games start on the 12th, and we'll be doing games. But, you know, everything's weird these days, but it's going to be a weird season. You know, normally this week I'd be at FedEx Forum watching the Grizzlies work out and watching their training camp, but no one allowed in. And, you know, so basically when the season starts, we'll be starting blind on what we know of the team. So, you know, it's going to be weird for everybody, you know, media-wise, trying to get access to a team and trying to get behind-the-scenes access. And, you know, I'm going to go into this season knowing as much about this team and seeing as much of this team as anyone else. So it's going to be really difficult. But, you know, just happy to have basketball back and get the guys back out on the floor and get another season started.
Amen. Fish, appreciate it, man. And look forward to hopefully chatting next week. Thank you, brother.
Chris, always a pleasure, man. Look forward to it.